continuing with Bhajan Rahasyam, we were just finishing the introduction. Yesterday we explained the seven treasures that the holy name brings us. If we chant properly with the proper attitude. And of course, along with bringing the seven treasures, each of the different parts of the first verse, Chaito Darpana Marjanam, mentions these seven treasures. As we mentioned, Chaito Darpana Marjanam, that's the first treasure, that the chitta becomes cleansed of all samskaras and vasanas. And then when the chitta is cleansed of all these things, then the soul can be reflected there. That's why it's said it's like a mirror. The soul is reflected into the chitta. And the chitta is the finest layer. Sometimes chitta is compared to mahatattva. The chitta is what separates the atma from the material world. Like we have earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego, then chitta. But it's so fine that we generally hear of bina ashchada prakrita. Krishna says in the 7th chapter of Gita that there are 8 coverings of the soul. And actually there's 9. The chitta is also there. So Lord Chaitanya says, this is where it all starts. Because our entanglement in the material world starts because the chitta is full of vrittis or transformations due to sense contact with the contact of the senses with the material world. So this chitta becomes cleansed by chanting. And then all these other benefits. Then last year we discussed also the second verse, Nam Namakari Bahuda Nicha Sarva Shaktis. And this verse, Lord Chaitanya is giving awareness of one's incompetence to execute this best form of sadhana. In the first verse, Chaito Darpana Marjanam, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is explaining how these 7 benefits or treasures that we'll get from chanting Hare Krishna. Ultimately, it will take us from cleaning the heart to realizing our siddha deha, if we chant Shuddha Nam under Guru's guidance, and entering into the Nitya Lila of Radha and Krishna as a servant in one of the rasas, Stayibhav. So that's how much power is in the holy name, so much benefit. And then in the second verse, Nam Namakari Bahuda, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, first he's saying, this is the best form of yoga, the best form of sadhana. No other sadhana can give you these transcendental results like this. But then he's saying in the second verse, but I feel incompetent. I am very weak-minded and I have no attraction or attachment to chanting or performing this best form of sadhana. Although Krishna's holy name contains all the powers and potencies of God, or Krishna, here what he's saying in this verse, he's saying that one can become attached to Nam Bhajan by taking shelter of the holy name in association with saintly devotees. This verse includes Sadhu Sangha and Bhajana Kriya and Anartha Nivritti, verse number 2. That's described in Bhajan Rahasyam. And you can read that. Then we discussed that last year. And then Trinadapi Sanichena. So this verse represents Nishta, the stage of devotion where one becomes very fixed. First of all, his basis of being fixed in devotion is that he actually has some attraction to chanting the holy name of the Lord. And it's, of course, sometimes it says Kirtaniya Sadhari. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, how is this possible? How can you chant all the time? What does this mean? Sadahari. Sada means, sat means eternal, every moment chanting, because we have to sleep and we have to eat and we have to bathe and dress and so many things. So we may not be able to chant during all those activities, especially sleeping. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his explanation, this verse, he's saying that we should accept that for all time and in all time, I have no other shelter but the holy name. Because obviously our sleeping is also devotion. Our eating and bathing, it's all bhakti when it's done with the consciousness that I'm sleeping only to get energy to serve Krishna. But if I'm sleeping, if I need, as we mentioned in another class, if I need 6 hours and I take 8 hours, then I'm not, that's enjoyment. So he's saying that, or what I wrote here, as one continues chanting Hare Krishna, contaminations are removed from the heart and one begins to chant with fixed determination. This verse represents nishtha or steadiness based on attraction to Krishna and firm faith in bhakti. Now one begins to display the behavior of a pure devotee while continuously chanting the holy name day and night with steadfastness. Such a steady, fixed devotee is humble, tolerant, prideless, and respectful to all. In this verse, Lord Chaitanya teaches how to successfully perform Nam Bhajan. So, in the first verse, he introduced Nam Bhajan as the panacea for all problems and as the sadhana to attain the topmost perfection of Madhurya Prem Seva of Radha and Krishna Vrindavan. In the second verse, he says, well, this thing is very high and very great and very powerful, but I'm very fallen and very unfortunate. But by the association of devotees, I will receive the blessings and the power to chant this holy name and take up this process. And if I become very serious and sincere and steady in the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, then I will actually get some taste. Even taste is coming. Sometimes we think that these are separate compartments, that when we enter one, we leave the other. Or when we're in one, we're not in the other. In other words, we say, Ado Sharatata Sarasanga Bhajanakriya Anarta Nivriti Shat Then Tato Nishta. So sometimes we think, oh, I'm doing Bhajanakriya, and then from Bhajanakriya comes Anarta Nivriti, and then Bhajanakriya stops. No, Bhajanakriya continues. Sarasanga, because everything, Ado Shraddha, everything, Shraddha is there everywhere. Radharani also has Shraddha, she has faith. And at every step there is faith, and every step there is Sarasanga. So we say, Ado Shraddha Tata Sarasanga. First there's faith, then there's Sarasanga. But there's also Sarasanga in the spiritual world. When we have Siddhadeya, we're also associating with sadhus. Who are the sadhus? Those sadhus, they're teaching us. What are they teaching us? They're teaching us how to please Radharani, exactly how to massage her feet. So Vishakha will teach us how to sing, and Lita Sakhi will teach us how to do different services, or how to control Krishna when Radharani's in Man. And so all these different, so we'll always be in association. It's called Sangha, Sakhi Sangha, or Guru Association. So now, then you come to the Bhajana Kriya. So Kriya means actions, or movements, which purify or elevate, or it can only mean, it also mean just movements. So movements of bhajan. Bhajan means worship. So at every step we'll be worshipping Radha and Krishna. Right? We're worshipping Radha and Krishna in sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. We're worshipping Radha and Krishna in sadhakadeya and siddhadeya. So bhajana kriya is always going on. And nishta. So when we come from bhajana kriya, we go to nishta. We think these are like different stages. Oh, I was in seventh grade in school, and then I went to eighth grade. And when I went to eighth grade, I didn't have anything to do with seventh grade, right? It was finished. All right, I didn't carry that classroom with me. No, I entered into a new grade and forgot about those teachers and forgot and entered new classes. But in this progression from Shraddha to Prema, everything there's an interconnection. So when we're in Nishta, the reason that we're able to be steady is because we're getting some Ruchi. Because the next stage after Nishta is Ruchi. And Ruchi means taste. So because we're getting some taste for the holy, not so much taste, but some taste is coming there, then we're able to maintain our, when we get the taste, then our faith increases. When our faith increases, then our determination to continue or deepen our practices of bhajan, that comes as a result of our increased faith. And then when we do with determination, we practice more, chant more, and more with more attention and more numbers, then we become more steady and more pure. So even at the level of nishta, the devotee has faith, he's becoming purified of anarthas, and he's associating with devotees, that's from the bottom side, and from the top side, the next level is also filtering down a little bit. Some of the rays of that ruchi, sometimes they use the word ruchi abhas, because it's not the purest form of ruchi, but some ruchi is coming. Even you can say, oftentimes it's said that the new bhakta, when you first join ISKCON, the new bhakta is so enthusiastic and everything's so wonderful and exciting and fun and then after a few months or days or weeks and it becomes like a grind or difficult, and then we say, what happened? And say, well, that was beginner's luck, or what do they say? What do they call it? What do they call it? There's some term for that. Beginner's enthusiasm or something like that. So in other words, Krishna gives a little nudge or he gives a little push to get you going. Sometimes you're pushing a car and it hasn't started yet. So when you're in the car and some group of people are pushing it, you're actually moving, but you're not really doing much. And then if they let go, then it doesn't start maybe. So then you have to get out and push it. So Krishna gives us a push. When we first join or come to Krishna consciousness, he himself is pushing us. And we feel, oh, this is really moving nicely. I'm really going forward. And then he lets go. He said, okay, now you push. You go, oh, wow, I stopped all of a sudden. It slowed down. Now we have to push. It's not a very good analogy, but it just kind of came out. But the idea that everyone has experienced mostly is that in the beginning, it appears that Krishna is giving us some type of ruchi. Obviously, it's not ruchi as is defined in the shastras when we describe these different levels. But because of ruchi, one is able to be somewhat steadfast. So then, at this level of nishtha, one displays these qualities of humility, tolerance, and pridelessness. And so then we come to the text 4 of Shikshastakam, which is Nadana Najanan Sundaram. And this is the, as one acharya is telling, he says the Shikshastakam is Lord Chaitanya's immortal teachings on the path of spiritual perfection. It's a very nice way to describe it. So this is the verse that we want to discuss, because this verse is kind of, this is where, from this point, when one becomes steady at the nishtha, and steadily chanting, steadily serving, and his faith is solid, then when he enters the platform of ruchi, then this is a difficult platform to enter. Because from here, it's kind of like you're climbing a hill, and then the nishtha is near the top, and when you get to the top, it's almost the ruchi is there. Because then you start going down. It's like it becomes very fast. The progress goes very fast after when ruchi comes, because the taste actually drives one on. It's like when people in the material world, people have a taste, rasa or taste. They call it rasa or taste. Taste for making money, and greed. They're driven by their greed to make money. And even they have tons of money, or crores of rupees, that the actual pleasure they get from accumulating more drives them on. And they have phrases like workaholics. They have alcoholics and workaholics. I mean, they work so hard, day and night, because they're getting some taste from accumulating money. So when we come to this platform of taste, ruchi, then things go very fast. So in this introduction, Mahaprabhu is describing a positive proposition where a progressive, this is in verse 3. In verse 3, Trinadapi Sunichena, Mahaprabhu is describing a positive proposition wherein a progressive devotee accepts and cultivates four different qualities to become steady in devotion and attached to chanting the holy name. So we accept these four qualities of humility, tolerance, pridelessness, and offering respects to others. These qualities, they come automatically as a byproduct of practicing devotion. Because Bhakti Devi brings with her all qualities. Because Bhakti Devi has two children. One of her children is Vidya and Vairagya, knowledge and renunciation. So you have Vidya and Vairagya. And then Bhakti, so that's once that's her children, then Bhakti Devi herself is Samvit and Ladini. So when Bhakti starts to move into one's heart, she brings all her paraphernalia. Just like if you get married, then your wife brings all her junk with her. You know, all her clothes and all her stuff, and all of a sudden your apartment's cluttered up with all kinds of junk. You have to get a bigger house. So when Bhakti Devi comes, she brings her associates with her. So you get knowledge. And from knowledge, when someone has knowledge, especially transcendental knowledge, knowledge brings qualities, brings a type of behavior and type of action. So a devotee, it's explained that automatically all good qualities come to him. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur and others are explaining that these qualities can also be cultivated. We can also cultivate tolerance, because we can recognize, as we get the eyes of devotion, even partial devotion, we can start to recognize the goodness in me and the badness in me. This is one of the... Actually, we say, Oman Gyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. The Guru actually gives eyes. Why? How does he give eyes? Because he gives transcendental knowledge. The eyes are Shruti and Smriti. Smriti Chakshus and Shruti Chakshus. Because he teaches us the Vedas. And when we get transcendental knowledge, then we get vision. Oh. And what is that vision? What type of vision do we get from studying the Vedas? We don't get the vision to see the world outside of us. We get the vision to see ourselves. We get the vision to see the world inside of us. What am I made of? It's called subjective vision. I am the subject. And we get the eyes to see ourselves. But otherwise, with material eyes, we're only seeing the material world and weighing everything. This is tall, this is short, this is fat, this is thin, this is valuable. We're observers of the phenomenon. We're observing the external phenomenon and passing judgments based on our experience or prejudice. That's material knowledge. That's called vidya. But paravidya is something different. Transcendental vision. We say transcendental vision. Or what is it? ITV. ISKCON Television. No, or transcendental vision. So Guru gives this vision. The vision of what? To see ourselves. Wow, I'm nasty, rotten, low down, dirty, filthy. I thought I was really clean and exalted and respectable. At least I was fooling everybody in the material world. They thought I was clean and respectable and a gentleman. And then when I was seeing myself like that. But then my guru gave me eyes, and I thought, oh, Gopinath, I'm Vishaya Durjana. I'm a wicked materialist. I'm a wicked materialist attached to sense gratification. And there's nothing good about me. Actually, I'm full of filth and dirt and envy and greed and so many things. Anyway, that's nice to know. Now let's work on it. So this is the vision that comes. So therefore, when one recognizes the lack of his qualities, he can also actively try to improve and take out what is bad and enhance what is good and try to acquire what is necessary. So that is the active principle. And the rest is up to Krishna. Because he says, Ananyas chintiyantumam yejana paripashate tesham nityabhyuktanam yogashemam vahamyam. He said, you try your best, but I'll also help you. Whatever you lack, I will give you. Whatever you need, I will provide. And anything good you have, I will enhance it. I will help it grow. So therefore, we accept, the devotee accepts and cultivates these four qualities in order to become steady in devotion and attached to chanting. Because this is the key that Lord Chaitanya is saying. Yes, the bhajan is chanting Hare Krishna, nam bhajan, and has all nija sarva shakti, all of Krishna's powers, all of his beauty, all of his holy dham, everything is there. But I'm dur devam. I'm unfortunate. What is my misfortune? Because I'm an offender. I'm envious. I'm stupid. And I'm lazy. And I'm reluctant to take up this process. And how will I get out of this unfortunate situation? Well, become humble and beg for mercy. Because when you're poor, you need someone to help you. So then poverty sometimes creates humility. Sometimes. So then we can approach. So then he's saying, here, pick yourself up. Pick yourself up with these, adopt these four qualities. Feel genuinely humble. And feel yourself and honor others and see and realize. Because when you chant in the beginning, when you start to chant, you realize what your actual position is, how insignificant we actually are. Because when we're existing only on a platform or the plane of false ego creates a very high idea of ourselves. Everyone, due to the influence of false ego, they think themselves the best, the greatest, the biggest. But then when you chant a little bit, just a little bit, not nowhere near the level of nishtha, you start to realize, oh, I'm not so big. I'm not so big after all. I'm actually only one tiny little spirit soul. And in this one room, there's millions of us. I thought I was the mayor of Salt Lake City. I thought I was the mayor of Salt Lake City. And I realized that I'm nothing but one jivatma, and there's billions of jivatmas inside the Salt Lake. What to speak of the city. So a certain kind of humility comes, so we can cultivate this, because this is the This is what Lord Chaitanya is saying here. Try and cultivate these qualities. The devotee tries to acquire the positive spiritual qualities of humility, tolerance, pridelessness, and respect for all. One way we acquire something is not only by understanding the necessity for such qualities, how they are beneficial. We understand with our intelligence that such qualities are beneficial and helpful for a devotee, which we are aspiring to become. But another way by which we acquire these qualities is by, you could say, osmosis. We absorb them, and we absorb them by actually seeing them. They have a phrase in English, monkey see, monkey do. Like the little baby monkeys at Sevakunj, they watch their mothers stealing eyeglasses. They're little babies, and they're sitting under their mother, or sometimes they're sitting on top. And she says, look, here, wait here a second, watch what I do. So then he sits there, and she goes down the pole, and then she stands on this little wall, and one guy's walking by in Sevakunj. She jumps on his shoulder, and as soon as he jumps on his shoulder, he grabs his eyeglasses and jumps off, and runs back to her baby. She says, see what I did? And he says, oh, that was really good. How did you do it so fast? He said, no, my mother taught me. Now I'm teaching you. And so what happens now? And then, you know, the baby monkey said, no, you watch. And the guy says, hey, give me my glasses. Hey, you bum, you know. And then he said, how do I get my... And he makes a big scene. Then some Brijbasis come and say, oh, my little lady, what happened? Oh, this monkey stole my glasses. Oh, you have to buy some bananas. Or some apples. You buy some apples or bananas and you go bargain. And you show the banana and you throw it over there to the side and he'll throw your glasses over there. You get your glasses like this. So then you do that and then that happens. Because I lived 3 years at Radhadamodar. I retrieved so many glasses for people at Radhadamodar. I've been in my room and it's 2 o'clock. Everyone's sleeping and there's somebody in the back courtyard. Ah! I go out, there's some old lady. I can't see. The monkey took my glasses. And he's sitting on top of the samadhi gong. Chewing on it, on the eyepiece, you know, the glasses, and I said, oh, here we go again. Go back, get some fruits. Hey, Baba, you know, here's your thing, and you throw it over there, and you get the glass. You know. So this is a parampara. It's Bandor parampara. Bandor means monkey. Monkey parampara. That they get trained up. So monkey see, monkey do. So in the same way, not that we want to steal glasses, but we want to steal the good qualities of Vaishnavas. We want to steal their humility and their tolerance and their pridelessness and their respect of all, respecting all. And we can only steal it if you can't steal someone's wealth unless you know that they have it, unless you see it and you know they have it. Then you can figure out how to steal it. So one of the best ways to actually develop these four qualities, which will help us chant very nicely, is to associate with advanced devotees, because then you see these qualities in action. You see, because we are seeing people. We are seeing people. We orient ourselves and interact with the world through our vision, through our eyes, primarily. Even they have phrases, seeing is believing. Of course, in spiritual circles, we say Shabda Brahman. This is the most perfect form of evidence. It's flawless, actually. Shabda Brahman is transcendental sound, is the best praman. Inferential knowledge or sensual perception or inferential knowledge or naya or logic have limitations and imperfections. But Shabda Brahman or transcendental knowledge is a tokshaja or a chuta. It's infallible and perfect. But nevertheless, when it's all said and done, we believe it if we see it. You hear so many things. That's just the way we are, because we trust our eyes, even though our eyes tell us it's a snake and it's actually a rope, because our eyes are subject to committing mistakes, imperfection, and cheating propensity. So when we go and we meet a very elevated sadhu, and then it creates a samskara. Samskara means an impression on our chitta. And we see this person has thousands of disciples. And he's vastly learned, and he's a great pundit, recognized all over India. And we're some lecher yavana from who knows where, Disneyland. And then we come to visit the person, and the person gets off their asan, offers dandabats, here's a seat, please sit down, wait here, I'll get you something to drink. And he goes out and prepares a drink and comes and brings it to you. And then he calls his disciples. Oh, look, the electricity's not there. Well, you fan our guest. And you're like, wow, what is this? You know, because this is vidya vinaya sampane brahmani gavi hashchani shuni chaiva sapakecha pandita samadarshana. A pundit, a learned man, he sees equally, samadarshan. He sees equally whether you're an elephant or a Disneyland wala or whatever you are. He says, oh, you're a Titi Narayan. You've come. You're visiting my ashram. You should be worshipped. With such love and such humility, it's striking. It's impressive. It touches the mind and heart. It creates samskara. And without having these samskaras or impressions on our mind, it's very hard, because that becomes the role model. That becomes the template to aspire for. Oh, I actually saw with my own eyes. I saw this quality of humility. I read about humility. Yes, humility means you're like a straw in a street and lower than this. And okay, all these philosophies and analogies is very nice, but I never saw it. I never saw it. And pridelessness, and I saw all the opposite qualities, and I have all those. I don't see them in me, and I never saw them anywhere. I remember once in a temple in Delhi, there were some Indian boys there, and they say that they were there one time. They asked me a question. They say that, he said, all these leaders, all these devotees, they sit on the asana and they're always saying we should serve, we're all servants of Krishna, we should serve the Vaishnavas, but I never seen any of them. They never serve. And they said, we're new boys, you know, how are we supposed to learn how to serve if we never see any of the leaders serving? Now, their idea was rather limited, obviously, because giving class is also service or whatever. But they thought that, well, why don't they come down and serve prasadam or clean, do something, and let us see with our eyes what we think means service. Because they were thinking devotional service means not just giving a class, because they've been to so many college classes and they didn't think that was devotional service when the professor speaks into philosophy. So somebody comes and speaks into philosophy and it's Krishna consciousness. So they wanted to see service in action. They're hearing, yes, we should serve. This guy comes in, he tells us we should serve, and he leaves, everybody serves him, he gets in the car and he goes. But I never saw this guy do any service. They say like this. So they were asking me to explain, and I try to explain that there's different ways to serve. But at least that's they have that expectation. So this is how these qualities will come up in us by experience. That's why sadhu sangha is so very, very important for our cultivation. So that was described in verse number 3. That we have to cultivate these positive qualities in order to come to the platform of steadiness and chanting. Now in verse 4, Nadana Najana Nasundarim, Kavitam Vajagadisha Kamaye, Mama Janmani Janmani Ishvare, Bhavatad Bhakti Rahoita Kitai, Lord Gauranga presents a negative consideration. In verse 3, Trinadapi, he's saying this is a positive consideration. Accept these qualities. These are good. These are good qualities. This is positive and progressive. This will help you become humble, become tolerant, become prideless, honor and respect all. This will help you. It'll give you benefit. It will give you attachment to the holy name. It will give you steadiness and bhakti. All good things. And so now there's something, a negative consideration. In this verse, the advancing devotee is told that he must give up all connection with sensual happiness in this material world. Because in verse 3, Lord Chaitanya is not intimating anything like this. He's saying, hey, carry on, everything, go on. Eat, drink, and be merry, but be humble. Eat, drink, and be merry, but be tolerant. Eat, drink, and be merry, but be prideless. Eat, drink, and be merry, but respect others. And eat, drink, and be merry, but chant Hare Krishna. Oh, I can do that. Oh, because that's how generally how we preach. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Now, can you be happy without woman and wealth? Because in this verse, verse 4, Lord Chaitanya says, yes, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. No women for men, no men for women, no money, no followers, no puja, no pratishtha. Acha? Hey, wait a minute, give me my money back. Give me that mantra card back. You gave me this mantra card that says, chant Hare Krishna, be happy, come to the Sunday feast, the love feast. the love feast turned pretty sour when I joined. It was a love feast, and love is supposed to be sweet and satisfying and blissful and joyful. And then I joined, and then I got, you know, put in the kitchen cutting potatoes 10 hours a day for Food for Life. Because they serve out 100,000 meals every day, and they have to cut potatoes for 9 hours a day. And I got appointed to be the potato peeler. So I'm cutting potatoes for 9 hours so they can cook for 3 hours and serve out 100,000 meals, Food for Life. There's not much love in this service. So what happened to the Chattari Krishna be happy? So in this verse, he's saying, Lord Chaitanya is giving a little bit of a negative consideration. Here the advancing devotee must give up all connection with sensual happiness of this material world. He must even give up the spiritual... So that someone might say, okay, all right, I'll give up everything. Women, wealth, position, nadana, najana, nasundaram, followers, servants, and everything. That's okay. I don't mind giving up this world because it's a lot of trouble of all these things anyway. But at least let me desire to get out of here and go to the spiritual world and get liberation. Okay, you're telling me, you're denying me this world. Okay, that's fine. It's painful, but I accept it. But can I embrace and accept that world, the eternal spiritual world? Can I at least go to heaven? Is it okay for me to desire to go to heaven? Because, you know, when I was brought up, that was a good thing to desire, you know, to go to heaven. You know, you're not Christians, right? Be a good Christian, go to heaven. Or whatever, you know, a Jew or whatever. Go somewhere, I don't know. You know, be good and go somewhere. So now Lord Chaitanya is saying, no, forget it, man. You can't have anything in this world, and you can't have anything in that world either. Well, wait a minute. Then where am I? I have no lokastandi. I have no lokastandi. I have no place. I can't go up and I can't stay here, and I don't want to go down. I don't want to go down there, down to hell. So what are you presenting here? He's saying, stay right where you are and cut the potatoes. Because this is bhakti. You're cutting potatoes now, and you will cut potatoes forever. But now you're cutting potatoes as sadhana. Soon you'll be cutting potatoes full of bhav. And eventually you'll be cutting potatoes and full of prem. So this is really what Lord Chaitanya is intimating. Because bhakti is only for bhakti's sake. We're doing bhakti why are we doing bhakti? We're doing bhakti to get more bhakti. Everything else in this material world, we're doing it to get something. Gyan, yoga, karma, everything. Or anything anyone's doing, any type of material pursuit in the three modes of nature is all working on cause and effect. You do this, you get that. Just like you go to any of these so-called New Age groups, art of bogeying, the art of enjoying, or the art of whatever, and they're saying, oh, you do this and you do that and you'll get this or that. You'll get peace of mind. Oh, but so this is all cause and effect, because it's, You do this, it will get you out of tamagun and put you in rajagun. You'll feel better if you're in rajagun. Or if you're in rajagun, you do this, and you'll go in sattvagun and make you feel better. But bhakti is transcendental. So bhakti is only for bhakti. That's it. So when people say, well, what do I get? If I become a devotee and take up this Hare Krishna stuff, what benefit do I get? What do I get out of it? Well, you know, you chant Hare Krishna and you chant Hare Krishna. That's it. Wait a minute. But first you give all your money to the temple. First you give all your money to the temple and your house and your car and have nothing, and that's you start like that, and then we'll give you the holy name, and you chant, okay, well, after I chant like 5 years, what do I get? Chapati and dal, you know, little service. What if I join ISKCON and work for like 30 years? If I join the railroad, the government, and I work for the railroad for 40 years, I get retirement with half pension and different benefits. So if I join Krishna Consciousness and I chant for 40 years, what does it end up? What result do I get? Well, if you chant for 40 years, well, probably you'll be doing some good chanting after 40 years. And then you'll just keep on chanting. Well, what about benefits and retirement? Well, I don't know. It's whatever Krishna arranges. I can't say. There's nothing written down over here. You just chant. You chant to chant. That's it. You're chanting now. The whole thing, all we're trying to do is to perfect our chanting. That's all. Oh, there's nothing in this ISKCON is chanting. Forget this. I want to go somewhere. If I put my time into something, I want to get something out of it. Listen, I'm result oriented. I'm not stupid. You know, I went to university. You know, I got a PhD. I'm not a jerk. I'm not going to waste my time for naught. I mean, you guys are a bunch of, you're all brainwashed. You're crazy people. You're spending 40 years someplace, and after 40 years, you get nothing. And when you join, they took everything. They took your house and car and your whole bank account and left you with nothing but two chapatis and a cup of dal. And after 40 years, of chanting, they say, what have you saved up? Well, two chapatis and a cup of dal. If I work in the material world hard with my intelligence for 40 years, I have a big bungalow and some stocks and bonds and insurance and all kinds of jazz that everybody has, right? When you work for 40 years in Krishna consciousness, you have a dhoti with a hole in it, a shirt with a hole in it, and a piece of floor to sleep on. But you're in bliss. I remember when I was on the streets in San Francisco selling Prabhupada's books, and 75, and then people say, do you have any insurance policy? And I said, yes. And they said, what company? I said, Hare Krishna Company. I said, no, that's no company. I said, what is your insurance? My insurance, I say, Hare Krishna. They said, what about retirement funds? What's going to happen to you? How old are you? Oh, I'm 24. What's going to happen to you when you're 50? When you're an old man, you're 50, you don't have any insurance, you don't have any money in the bank, and your parents have disowned you, you have two brothers, you already told me your father's written you out of the will, and you're a useless wretch of the family, and you have nothing, you inherit nothing. And where will you be when you're 50? I said, I don't know, probably standing here on the street selling these. I hope. That's what I told him. I said, I hope I'm standing here selling these books. He said, oh, you guys are crazy. He said, you should be serious. You have to think about your future. You have to think about your future. He goes, that's what my father told me. And that's what his father told him. And there's a whole parampara called bhayam. Bhayam parampara. Bhayam means fear. A parampara based on fear. Fear of the future. Fear of the unknown. Because they have no vishvas, no faith in God. And I told him, I said, buddy, I tell you, you know what my insurance policy is? My insurance policy is a company called Faith. Faith Insurance Company. Faith in God. The difference between you and me is I have faith in God. And he's my father. And he's a good, he's not like this other father that threw me out of the house when I was 21. But I have faith that my father will take care. That's what I told him in 1975. And till today, I don't have any insurance, and I don't have any, you know, but somehow I have a roof over my head. Krishna's given me a roof over my head. And for the last 30 some years, I've had a roof, floor to sleep on, and two chapatis and a cup of dal, and some potatoes to cut. So, you know, what's the problem? And certainly, I think our life, if we met that gentleman again, we would probably find that the content of our life is a lot more enjoyable than the content of his life. I would like to think so. Maybe not, can't say. So devotee has, everything is very auspicious and very bright for a devotee. So he's saying here that, now this is the bad news. In verse 4, Lord Chaitanya starts to tighten things up. In verse 3, he just asked us, in verse 3, Trinadapi Sanichina, Lord Chaitanya is saying, please adopt these impossible qualities. They're very difficult to adopt those qualities, but at least it's possible to try to adopt those qualities of humility, tolerance, pridelessness, and respect of all, and still exist happily in this world. Now in this world, now the next verse, in verse 4, he's saying, okay, now you're humble? Are you humble now? You're ready? Are you feeling humble? Are you tolerant? Okay, guess what? Now I'm going to take everything, whatever you have, I'm going to take away. Now I'm going to ask for everything you have. Your wife, your house, your food, everything. Hey, wait a minute. I mean, first you asked me to develop a few qualities. Now you're saying that I can't have anything of this world, and I can't even try to get out of this world and have something in that world. You're trying to tell me that all I can have is service, ahoituki, Bhagavad Bhakti, ahoituki, right? So now he's saying that he must even give up the desire for liberation if he wants to realize his pure spiritual form, Siddha Sarup. To accept the embrace of Sri Nam, Prabhu, and relish the divine ambrosia of Nam Ras, a sincere devotee must especially give up the embrace of women, family, followers, wealth, and mundane knowledge. Interesting. It's like it's obvious that we can't embrace two people at the same time. It is not within our physical capacity to wrap our arms around two people at once. We can embrace one person and then let go of that person and embrace another person, but not two at once. At least very effectively. So here, Lord, this introduction is saying that if we want to embrace Sri Nam Prabhu as our everything, then we have to let go of everything else we've been embracing, life after life. And in this verse 4, Lord Chaitanya describes the heart of one who is tasting the joy of Nam Sankirtan and relishing the bliss of devotion at the stage of Ruchi. So this is the heart of one who's actually experiencing Nam Ruchi. Or taste for the holy name, that taste, the taste of bhakti, of actually serving, he says the bliss of bhakti. I mean, there's the bliss of bhakti, the bliss of bhav, and the bliss of prem. They all have their degrees of bliss. In prem, it says sandra visheshatma. It says that it's constant, sandra ananda visheshatma. There are six characteristics of devotional service that are mentioned in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And it says, Sri Krishna Karshani and Sandra Ananda Visheshatma. Vishesh means very special, unique. And Sandra means concentrated, thick. It's so concentrated and thick that nothing else can mix in there. It's like if you take a sponge, and you soak it in, and you put in some water, it can't absorb any more water. It's totally super saturated with water. So one of the characteristics of Krishna Prem is that one becomes Sandra Ananda Visheshatma. That his Atma, his mind, his soul, his heart, his everything, his senses, become super saturated with a very special quality of bliss. Sandra Ananda Visheshatma. So that's the bliss of bhakti at the level of prem. But even at the level of sadhana, there is chan Hare Krishna be happy. There is a drop of bliss, a ananda bindu, a drop of bliss even at that time. So this is what he's saying, that when one comes to this, when one tastes that drop of bliss from the holy name, then he thinks wealth, women, all these things are insignificant. Well, I think I'll stop here. And then we have 10 minutes if anyone has any questions. It's just an introduction about this. Yes, here
you are. You were mentioning how when we join, you know, there's some initial push by Krishna, and then everyone feels it, I guess. But then my idea was also that somehow when we join, you know, it is kind of fresh, and if we continue like that, everything's okay. But then when we start making offenses and we start finding fault in other devotees, then that kind of initial,
dampens the enthusiasm.
Yeah, it becomes down. So is it both, or is it mostly that Krishna just gives that push and then he lets us run, or the offenses also kind of cover that initial bliss that we have?
Well, I mean, if one is really sincere, one tape Prabhupada said if a devotee, of course, what does this mean? You know, what does it mean exactly, sincere? But Prabhupada said if one is very sincere in his purpose or his attempts or desire to serve Krishna, then he'll never make any mistakes in Krishna consciousness. And this utsaha, in other words, Krishna may, it appears that from some direction, Krishna or the freshness of, or newness of the endeavor is exciting our mind and senses, or Krishna himself is pushing us. Somehow or other, we have enthusiasm when we start. What the source or cause of? Generally we say Krishna, because Krishna is the source of everything. And we're enthusiastic when we start, but as you said, we may fall into the rut because of our own inborn envy. Because we have Prabhupada still, some. At least until we're initiated, we have a great deal of Prabhupada. And then we actually, the purity of our following would determine how much we become free from that. So we have a lot of envy. There's some more than others. So that envy expresses itself as fault-finding with other devotees. And Krishna doesn't like that. So Krishna withdraws, when Krishna is not pleased with us, then he withdraws that enthusiasm or that taste of bhakti. But if that is in our nature, our intrinsic nature is not, we're not envious and we're open-hearted and simple-hearted, then we will go forward steadily and we'll be like, always feel like a beginner. That beginning enthusiasm will always be there. Krishna will always be, either we're pushing ourselves or Krishna's pushing us, or we feel that we're always going forward. Because bhakti is meant to be progressive. Bhakti is not meant to be, there should never be a time when water is flowing. Flowing water never becomes stagnant because it's always moving. So if we're always moving properly in bhakti, we'll never become stagnant. We'll always be fresh. Bhakti will be fresh, we'll be fresh, and we'll have enthusiasm, and we'll go forward step by step. Because it is systematic to some extent. It's systematic, and we can endeavor on our own to a certain level. And that endeavor will qualify us for receiving mercy from advanced Vaishnavas, which will pull us up to the more higher levels of bhakti, which depend on kripa, mahant kripa, to enter the realm of Raghunuga Sadhana and Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti. We can only endeavor to some extent, and then the rest is their mercy. That's why they say that there's sadhana and sadhya. Our sadhana is our personal endeavor and activities, and the sadhya is the goal. Sadhya is prema. But as we'll find in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, sadhana doesn't create, doesn't cause, the sadhana is not the cause of the sadhya. It's not that we do sadhana for ever and ever that we'll get the sadhya of prema. The goal of sadhana is prema, but we only get prema by the mercy of the Vaishnavas. And bhava by the mercy of the Vaishnavas. So the sadhana is simply creating, making us qualified for the attention of the Vaishnavas. And sometimes they can shower their mercy or give their attention to someone that doesn't do any sadhana. That's why it's called Kripa City and Sadhana City. Both are Kripa City. Sadhana City, we're actually actively doing sadhana and waiting for mercy. And in Kripa City, one doesn't do any sadhana. They just get the mercy. Of course, we may try to go that way also. Do nothing and wait for the mercy. But we may wait for hundreds of births. So we're advised by the Lord Himself to do sadhana. And the acharyas, they say, do sadhana and do it like this. And part of sadhana bhakti is to associate with Vaishnavas. Sajatiya Snigda, affectionate, advanced Vaishnavas. And when we associate with affectionate, advanced Vaishnavas, then they give us their mercy. When they give us their mercy, then we advance. So it's like, even at beginner sadhana, one of the principles of sadhana bhakti, which is in our hand, which we can practice and which we can do, is to seek out and find advanced devotees and serve them with humility and pray for their mercy and please them. And then when we get that mercy, that's the mercy our sadhana is solely and wholly performed to get the mercy. That's what we say, yasya prasada. We want the prasad. Oh, give me prasad. Everyone's always saying, give me blessings. Blessings come by serving. Blessings means you have to capture someone's heart. You don't capture someone's heart by coming up to them and say, Maharaj, give me your blessings. Acha. Yeah, TK. Radhi, radhi. Yeah, it's a very funny thing. People, Indian people, they know that for lifetimes. Now Western people are picking it up by monkey see, monkey do, like the baby learns how to steal glasses. So Western people never knew about this idea, but Indian people, they have the culture of going with their mother or father to visit some sadhu, and they watch their mother and father like the baby monkey watches his mother steal glasses. And their mother and father goes to a big sadhu and says, oh, Maharaj, please give me your blessings, and little kid's watching. Then he grows up, and he goes to a sadhu and says, oh, Maharaj, give me your blessings. This is a common part of the Indian culture. But they don't do any service to the sadhu, and they don't please his heart. Or actually, so why should he give blessings? Why? Blessings is something special. It's not that he's got a bag full of money and he's just passing out free money. Because blessings means he wants to give his heart, and his heart is his ishtadev. He's not going to give his lover to anybody. He's going to just throw them around here and there. We have to be qualified. That's why Krishna says, what is the qualification to get the blessings? You have to submit yourself. First of all, submit yourself. Tadviti pranipatena paribhashnena sevya. Come and do, because just like like there's two ways to do things. You see that sometimes they run guest houses like this. Some guest houses, you come in and they put, you have to pay. You pay and you stay there. And some guest houses, there's no charge. This is an old standard of India, dharmashalas. You come in, you need a room, you stay. How much? If you give whatever you want. And those guest houses make more money, they collect more money than the ones that have fixed fees. Because they base their operation on love and trust. They simply give, they give service. They give service, and because they touch the people's hearts, and the people reciprocate. So they actually, you know, they're extending themselves first. So if you want to get the blessings from the Vaishnava, first you come and do the service. You submit and you serve, but now the Western people, which I've seen over the years, is they picked up this cultural practice from the Indians, coming to India so many times. So now so many Western people come up to the saints and sadhus, "Oh Maharaj, give me your blessings." And he says, and he's thinking, "Oh my God, now the Western people are becoming like the Indian people, you know. They just come in for an hour and dandabats, you know, and, "Oh Maharaj, please give me your blessings," blah, 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 and then they go out. They don't do any service, you know, "Oh, go clean the cow dung from the goshala." You know, and without even add, they should come like with a straw between their teeth, like Sanatana Goswami approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They should just come in and go to the goshala and clean it. And then the guru says, "Who's that in the goshala cleaning all the stool out of there?" And then one of his disciples says, "I don't know, some guy from Russia or something. He just came in, and I don't know what he's doing over there." And what's going to happen? The guru's going to say, "Who is that?" His attention is going to go over. "Hey, call that guy here." Because he came with a straw between his teeth and doing humble service. "Hey, give me the blessings." It's like, so it's a joke. It's really a joke. Sometimes I've been sitting with some big sadhus and people come like this, Indian people or Western people. And I watch it, you know, and then after they leave, I said, "So what did you give them?" I said, "I just nodded my head." You know, that's what, if you ever see them, they always go like this. "Ah, gee, ha, ha, yeah." You know, they say, you know, "Mangala Vraho, Mangala Vraho." Mangala Raho, may everything, Mangala Raho, Mangalam Bhavatu, Mangalam Bhavatu. Let everything be auspicious. But that's non-specific, that's like non-generic aspirin or something. You know? It's like, so this is the idea. So any other thing? I think it's time. Yes.
When you spoke, and when you spoke also, you spoke that Krishna is pushing us. Can we think that actually is dragging? This is more my idea.
Yeah, because pushing it.
Ishtadev can be the driver and you're the passenger and you take care of everything.
Yeah, because pushing, if someone's pushing, you may not know who it is. Because if someone's pushing you, they're from behind. But if someone's pulling you, then it's very clear to know who your benefactor is. Because they're right in your vision, because they're pulling you. Come on. So that's how Prabhupada usually described it. Is that even if the disciple is reluctant to go back to Godhead, he says, "I will pull you back to Godhead." And Prabhupada said, "I will pull you." He didn't say, "I'll push you." He said, "I'll pull you back to Godhead. I will take." He said, "You hold on to my dhoti and I'll pull you back to Godhead." Because in just like they sometimes say that the Vaishnavas, the devotees of Vishnu, they keep a sika, so that Vishnu will come and pull them by the sika. But in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, oftentimes when one becomes Paramahamsa or Babaji, like the six Goswamis, there's no Sika. Because they're not, you know, this is the Aishwarya conception. That it's interesting when you think about it. All the Vaishnav Sampradayas, they have the conception that you're drowning the ocean of birth and death, like in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a picture there. And Garuda comes down, and then he reaches down, and the Vishnudutas reach down, they grab you by the Sika, and they pull you out of the ocean of birth and death, right? But if you read in the Gaudiya Vaishnava literature, there's nothing like that. This is the Aishwarya Maya conception of mukti, right? Because when you read about our conception of mukti, what happens is that you attain prema in this body, and then you leave this body and you take birth from the womb of a gopi. You don't get on Garuda. For the Gaudiya Vaishnava, there is no Garuda. There is no being yanked by the Sika. You realize you come to the at whatever life, this life or whatever life, you realize your siddhadeya, for example, in Mandri Bhav or Madhurya Bhav, as a Mandri, you're meditating in that siddhadeya, and that's your Bhav, it's called Gopi Bhav, and Bhav gives the next body. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajat yanti kalevaram. So whatever Bhav we have, that's the body we have. If I have Bhav for woman, I get woman's body. I have Bhav for man, Bhav means sentiment, attachment, love, affection, feelings, and deep, then I get body of a man. So if I have bhava for gopi, and I'm always meditating on gopi, and I'm identifying myself as a gopi, and I'm serving as gopi, then I have to get a gopi deha in Boma Vrindavan. So forget about Garuda. I go directly, when I leave this body, I go directly into the womb of a gopi, and Garuda doesn't carry me there. And there's no Garuda involved at all. I go directly into the womb of...
No stork.
Yes, no, it could be a stork. There's no stork. A stork is like a big duck or something.
No, there is baby in European.
Yeah. I know. Duck, stork, they have a big sack under their neck for fish, and carry the babies come by a stork. But it doesn't go like that. So that's why we don't need a sikha. It's like some people have these 35-foot long sikhas, you know, and you know, it doesn't even, like, I don't know. I've been 30 some years in the movement. My sikha seems to get smaller every day, which is good. Maybe maybe it'll turn into a bani or something like that. But you know, it's like some people say, Maharaj, you know, how long have you been in the movement? I said, 32 years or something. How come your sikha is so big? I said, well, I hope my bhakti is growing more than my sikha. because some of these Bengalis, if their bhakti was as long as their sikha, they would be back in the spiritual world. You know, they have like 10-foot long sikhas. You know. So, I think that's it. Anything more? Quick.
Yeah. Yes. Again,
born, we take birth from the womb of a gopi in Boma Vrindavan. Janmani, Janmani, Ishvari, Bhavata. This is the very verse we're talking about. Janmani. Always there's birth. Krishna himself took birth. Krishna is taking birth. What's wrong with birth? Krishna is taking birth at every second. Every second, Krishna is taking birth, because each one of Krishna's pastimes is eternal. That means, 1 second he's taking birth, and that, so as second that he takes birth from Devaki's womb, the next second he's taking birth from Devaki's womb in another universe, because it's eternal. So Krishna, you're worried about taking birth. Krishna is always in a cycle of birth and death, in that sense. Because Krishna is always taking birth, and he's always having Moshala Lila, some hunter Jaras shooting him in the foot or whatever, and appearing like death. Of course, there's no death, as we know. But, and you know, it's a transcendental birth. So Krishna is not, because the thing is, just imagine, because it's all, whether if you're sleeping and you're doing bhakti and you're waking, sometimes when you close your eyes and sleep, you're doing bhakti in your sleep. You're chanting, you're cooking, especially if it's some Janmashtami, you're cooking so many preparations and you have a plan to make so many. In your sleep, you're also cooking. And you say, oh, I'm cooking this and cooking that. And you wake up, and then it's time to cook, and then you're cooking. So whether you're sleeping or awake, you're doing bhakti. So whether you're in this body or the next body, you're doing bhakti, and that's you're in the spiritual world. There's no fear of death. That's why it says it. Neha bikrama trayate mahatobayam, that Krishna delivers you from the greatest fear, that's not having human body. Because human body, you can do bhakti. So as long as, that's what Krishna said. Krishna's not saying, he says, Nehabi kramo nashosti pratyavayona vidyate swapam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobaya. Swapam dharma, if you do a little bhakti dharma, a little prem dharma, then there's no fear of the future because you get human body. And human body you can perform bhakti. Just like now, when someone comes to the platform of Ruchi, what to speak of a sakti or bhava, he's in bliss. He's in transcendental, he's in the material body, but he's jivan mukta. Iha yasya haridasya karmanamanasadgira. Haridas, when one becomes a pure Haridas, he's here or there, what do I care? Because you realize that whatever I'm doing now, I'll do in my next life. But I'll start sooner. If I start now when I was 24, next time I'll start when I'm born. It's like this. Yes.
Prabhupada pointed that out. He said in the beginning when we become devotees, we should desire to go back to Godhead. But when we become a bit more advanced, then we don't mind taking birth again and also helping others.
Yeah, because when we join, we're suffering, and we want out. We want something better. But after we advance a little bit, we're in the spiritual world. In the beginning, Prabhupada said, yes, when you join, you should want to go back to God and be with Krishna. Back to God means absorbed in serving Radha and Krishna, day and night. So after a few years, if you really make advancement, you're absorbed in serving Krishna. Look at these gurus in ISKCON. They're absorbed day and night. They don't sleep. They're on the phone and typing and preaching this, that. You know, they're experiencing something. And it's not mundane, they're just absorbed. So this is a, so then you say most of them, even you ask, you see, you want to go back to God? He says, no, I'm too busy. I'm too busy doing service. I am. What do you mean back to God? Because that's a type of gyan. That's also a covering. It's called anavritam. Anukulina Krishnanu Shilanam. It says, what is that verse? We're studying that verse. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma adyanavritam. Avritam. Avritam means the coverings of karma and jnana. Karma means enjoyment and movements in the material world, and jnana means liberation. So even a desire to go back to God, it is a covering of jnana. I want liberation. Because a devotee rejects liberation, right? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, we reject mukti, all forms of mukti. So even, because going back to God, what does that mean? It means going to the spiritual world. That means Salokya Mukti, right? If you say, I want to go to the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan, that's a planet, Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna Loka. So that's Salokya, to live on the same planet as the Lord. So it doesn't only mean Vishnu Loka, that's Salokya, but also Krishna Loka is also Salokya. So did Lord Chaitanya teach that our goal was Salokya liberation? Yes or no? Did Lord Chaitanya teach that the goal of bhakti is Saloki liberation? What did he teach that the goal of bhakti is? Prem. Krishna prema pumarta mahan, right? This is our goal. Bhakti, we're already, bhakti is the preliminary, is a seed, is the preliminary, you know, it's like, you can say diluted prem. And bhava is more condensed bhakti, and then fully condensed bhava is prema. So we already, the goal is bhakti. And now we have diluted bhakti, so we have to kind of thicken it up. Then the goal is thicker bhakti. Then the goal is prem. So prem seva. Now we're doing bhakti seva and bhava seva and prem. Oh, you say bhava, he's doing bhava seva. So what are we doing? We're doing bhakti seva, then bhava seva, then prem seva. Prem se kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya, right? With love, call out for the help of Lord Chaitanya Nityananda. So sometimes that shatters our impressions of what we thought Krishna consciousness was all about. But Shikshastakam is for that. It's to create light where there's darkness. That's what, and Brihad Bhagavatamrita is the atom bomb for misconception. And Brihad Bhagavatamrita is the most important book for Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Because what the deepest message of that book is, Vrindavan is right here, right now. Gopa Kumara went from this Vrindavan, he went all over the place to that Vrindavan, he came and said, wait a minute, that's the same as where I came from. So we, Radha and Krishna, right here, right now, in UP, but it's not UP, it's a transcendental Dham, holy Dham of Sri Dham Vrindavan. Leelas are going on, and we can enter those Leelas by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, when we have pure consciousness. And realize, you know, established in Stai Bhav. And it's right here, here it is. Where are you going? I'm nowhere. You have to go back to God, well, I'm already there. Yeah, you meet siddhas in Vrindavan. They're not. You don't ask, are you going back to Godhead? What do you mean? What do you mean back to Godhead? I don't want Salo. I'm here. It's like this.
Prabhupada also makes that point in some famous statement about how he says in one point, he says, you think that now you have fallen, but actually he says you have not fallen. You're already there.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of paradox where we're looking for Vrindavan somewhere else, but actually it's here, like the same point you're making.
Yeah, I mean, this is a, when I got this Gaudiya Math Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there was, you know, they have a little blue one, that little blue one in English. I got that around 1986, and I read that, and I said, oh my God, I had all these ideas, I'm going back to Godhead, because I was coming to Vrindavan so many years, and I said, wow, my God, this is it. This is it. The Radha and Krishna, this is back to God. This is Vrindavan. That's why Prabhupada, he said, this is my home. When he came to Vrindavan, he said, I'm home. This is my home. And he didn't, because he's saying back home, back to Godhead, and we're thinking it's, well, somewhere you get in a spaceship, and oh, watch out, Indraloka, Vishnuloka. And you got to avoid all these planets as you go off the spaceship. You know, like driving in a race car in Indianapolis 500 or something. And then finally, you know, you land at Goloka Vrindavan. And when Prabhupada says, he said, oh, Vrindavan, what did he say? Mayapur is my place of worship. Bombay is my office. And Vrindavan is my home. And then he said, when he came to Vrindavan, when he entered that place in Krishna Mallam Temple, he said, this is my home. When he went to London, he said, take me home. Back home, back to Vrindavan. So when Prabhupada himself was actually speaking about home, he's talking about right here. And when he's saying back home, back to Godhead, does he mean back to this home right here, back to Godhead Vrindavan, or does he mean get in your spaceship and drive, you know, 50 million miles? Because what our conception is, back, being back to God or back home means I'm in my Siddhadeha and I'm serving Radha and Krishna day and night, and they're there. So if I see them here, then where do you want to go? Where's there to go? So that's why this is one of the Panchanga Bhakti, is Mathura Vasasthali, to live in Mathura Mandala. Confirmed.
There's one more during the Jalasutta diary. Vaisna Prabhupada is offering his prayers, a lotus feet of Krishna. Where he says he wants to be with him.
I'm hankering.
Roll on the ground, jumping, hearing throat.
Yeah, yeah.
Three verses are there connecting.
Yeah, he's also on the same poem. He's talking about, I'm hankering so much to be with Radha Damodar and Seva Kunj, because of his deities. Okay, Hare Krishna.